Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, for a show that is explicitly about expectations. That's it. I don't mean to ruin it for you. It's about other things too. But not really. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Warning. This show is different from all other Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White shows. I'm going to attempt to explain Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. So if you have not heard all of my past shows, all of my future shows, and this one, there will be spoilers. So do not listen. What does it mean to spoil something? For example, let's say you have a piece of cheese and it has way too much mold on it. Not just a little mold like Roquefort or something, mold that is put there on purpose, injected for aesthetic reasons, for taste reasons. This is the bad kind of mold. And maybe there's also bugs on it and hair. Now, that cheese for you as food is spoiled. But really, all it's done has been transformed. It's something different than it was. It defies your expectations. It isn't the kind of cheese that you want or need or could use. But those bugs are loving it. They're having a cheese holiday. They're dancing around on that. They're thinking, oh, this is wonderful. It's just like getting a new deck. I'm going to have a party, and I'm going to invite my friends, additional bacteria, and my buddy Random Hair, both straight and curly, and we're going to coat this deck with fun. And see, so it's spoiled, but it's not really spoiled. Another thing that you might observe is that this may seem like rambling. And I've been told that, saying that this fella is rambling. And that implies that there is no intention or organization or no underlying meaning. I'm not comparing myself to a Jackson Pollock painting, but I'm going to compare myself to a Jackson Pollock painting. A lot of people see one and they say, well, that's just splattered paint. But the artist intends it to be a composition. And if you look at it as a composition, you might actually see something a little less random. Or you might see randomness used as a way to express something or to evoke a feeling. Yes, there can be information embedded in things. A lot of times nonsense is confused with nonsense. And what do I mean by that? Well, I've heard people say something is crazy ramblings, and all they've done is sort of miss a clue. For instance, years ago, there was a fella in Tallahassee, where I lived, and he was mentally ill, and we had lots of mutual friends, and one day he took a lot of hallucinogens, which was probably a bad combination with the mental illness. And he decided that he would break in to the Capitol building of the state of Florida. And I don't know that he had a plan, but he ended up breaking into the Sergeant-at-Arms office and finding the Sergeant-at-Arms secret bottle of whiskey. Well, a guard discovered him and called all the police. There were so many SWAT teams and local police and sheriffs, and they surrounded the place because they thought maybe there was some sort of hostage incident going down. So they got on their bullhorns and they said, come on out of there, you hostage taker. So he wrote some things down on a piece of paper, like any good hostage taker would do. All he had taken hostage was a bottle of whiskey, and he handed it to the police. Now, the police got it, and they made copies, and they gave it to the press. And I was standing next to a reporter when she received a copy. And she looked at it, and she read one portion. She said, oh, this is just nonsense. This is just crazy. And the thing she thought was crazy was a request for 666 donuts for the police. And I giggled, because I thought, well, that's just a silly juvenile joke. That has nothing to do with being crazy, really. I thought that was particularly cogent. Just kind of a little bit flippant for a situation like that, but certainly not crazy. So she didn't really have the key to that ransom note, which was this fella, though plagued by mental illness and tripping hard, was still able to make a joke. Is it a joke? What are you listening to? Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, it seems to me like you're trying to lose me, like you're trying to confuse me, like you want me to stop listening. Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm just convinced that the people who would follow are the ones that I really want to talk to, because they're willing to go to a place where they can put aside their expectations. And when you put aside your expectations, you see more. The act of observing is fraught. It comes with a lot of baggage. You see what you want to see, or rather you see and hear what you expect to hear. You hear some sounds, and you might say, that doesn't seem like a song to me. That ain't music. Well, maybe it's music that you're not used to hearing, and that if you were acclimated to it, if you were informed about it, you would all of a sudden hear the tune. That happens with music from other cultures. A lot of times we think we know what a song sounds like until we hear someone else's idea of what a song is, and we find some intrinsic value in it. We say, wow, that is also beautiful, or that also makes me feel something or think something. And all this time, I thought it was just a jumble of nonsense. Oh, it may very well be a jumble of nonsense. Walk this way. Come with me. Where are we going? I have always believed that a straight path is a terrible way to get somewhere. Because if you go in a straight path, you avoid all the surroundings of the thing you're headed to. So if we were headed to a cabin in the woods, and we took a straight path, you wouldn't know what was behind the cabin. You wouldn't know what was on the sides of the cabin. You wouldn't know what surrounded it. You would miss its context. All you would do is dive to the heart of it. That's what we do sometimes when we ask people to sum something up. Sum up that novel. What is the plot of that novel? Well, you know, not all novels, not all art has a plot necessarily. Sometimes they're just details. Sometimes it just makes you feel things. There's lots of movies like that. I happen to like the movies of the Japanese director Ozu. Now, a lot of people say, gee, nothing happens in his movies. There's no plot. It's not that. It's not that nothing happens. They're not about nothing. They're about situations and people's reaction to them. That's what I'm watching. Gosh, that sounds like Seinfeld, a show about nothing. It also was not a show about nothing. It was a show about situations and then the individual's reaction to those situations. Are you saying that Ozu influenced Seinfeld? Yes, maybe unwittingly, but it's the same sort of thing. They are related. It isn't about nothing. I'm not rambling. I'm talking about something. I'm just talking around it. I'm talking in a spiral. And I'm not in any rush to get to the point, because I don't know that the point resides in a single space. I think the point may reside in a cloud of probabilities around the thing. Oh, if I decide on one thing, that fixes it in time and space. This way, I operate in the quantum realm. I operate in a world where all probabilities happen at the same time and nothing happens at the same time. I find that wonderful. And you know, when we set out to do art, we realize that that could be a wonderful thing. I've seen people tell stories on TV or something, and they kind of paint themselves into a corner. Then they have to create alternate universes, or they have to go into different timelines or things like that, because they've restricted themselves, and they realize they need a more open space. Oh, look at me. I didn't count on filling up all this canvas. Now I gotta attach other canvases to it. I know, it's difficult. Let's start with the title of the show, shall we? Why is there not production music? It seems like you're breaking rules. It seems like you're just talking on the radio. Now, haven't we decided that that's boring? Haven't we decided collectively that you need some sort of music under you, or you need to break it up into little digestible chunks? That's it. Could you cut up my meal for me? I would like it cut up into little tiny pieces. Don't just put it all before me. I don't know what to do with it. Have you ever gotten a meal like that? You say, I don't even know how to go about eating this thing. What do I eat first? How do I divide it up? How did I get it all in my mouth? I don't know. Just shove your face into it. But it's a baked Alaska and it's on fire. I don't know. Take a chance. I would remove the sparklers first. They don't really make that baked Alaskan much anymore. I've seen it on cruise ships. Because it's just a mound. I don't know what it is. Has anyone ever eaten one? I think it's blancmange with sparklers. But it could be something else. It could be a delicacy. See, I have expectations. I just see a blob and I see the sparklers and I think, well, it's probably not. If it needs fireworks, if a food needs something like that, if a food needs a hat or a little bow around it, I'm not sure that it can stand on its own. Miracle nutrition. Let's break down those words. That's too far. Don't break them down that far. Miracle. What's a miracle? A miracle is something, I was going to say unexpected, but it's not unexpected. People expect miracles. They pray for miracles. It's just something that's improbable, something that probably is not going to happen because it defies the rules. It's something that is impossible or so improbable that it's virtually impossible. And yet we hope for it and we have expectations for it. So we kind of know what we think a miracle is going to be. Therefore, if we're looking for one, how do we know we're not missing them? Miracles. Nutrition. Nutrition is something we all need. We all need to eat. And, we got to do it all the time. It isn't something that you can do once and then forget about it. Set it and forget it. I don't even know what that's about. I forget what that's about. An oven or you set it and you forget it. Now I've forgotten the thing. The advertisement itself has fulfilled its own prophecy. The catchphrase is set in my mind. Set it. Now you forget it, and I've obeyed. I've forgotten. And that's a way with a lot of things that have come to me through advertising. Oh, they're set in there, but then they're forgotten. And I think that's wonderful, too. I don't mind remembering an old catchphrase from a store. Here's one I remember from my youth. Johnny and Mac by the railroad track, the world's finest. And that's a fact. Now, don't remember what the business did. If you're looking for it, it's near a railroad track. Whatever they make, they're the finest. So all that information is still in there. That's good to know. Nutrition is fleeting. Nutrition is required, and it's something we have to look for all the time. Miracles are improbable, but something we expect. Miracle nutrition. What's that? Something that we thought we'd never find that will satisfy us once and for all. I don't know that I want to be satisfied once and for all. I don't mind looking for it. I find meals to be one of the finest, most blessed parts of life because they are rare and because I know not everybody is getting it. It isn't something we all don't get nourished. There are people who starve. There have always been. It is awful. None of us should have to go without food, but we do. So when we do get it, are we thankful? Because we've got nothing to compare. We're so used to it. If there's no hunger, how can you be really satisfied with your food? It's like people who overeat. I remember reading about a king when I was young, and I don't remember who it was, but he's really hungry. And see, if you're a king, nobody tells you no, and you don't run out of things. It's that way with rich drug addicts, too. Ooh, it's a curse. But in this case, it wasn't heroin, it was melons. So this king liked melons, and he just kept eating them. He'd eat melon after melon after melon after melon until, like the character in the Monty Python movie, he exploded. I don't know if he literally did it, but it swelled in his belly, and it killed him because he ate too many of these melons. They weren't rare. I don't know. They cooked them. Do you cook melon? I don't mean like that. I mean, just had too many of them. Oh, I hope I'm not shoving melon down your throat. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. What I do want to do is I want to confuse your expectations. I want to spin you around in a circle so that you see things differently. Woo! That's why people take drugs that make them alter their universe, because they're so used to seeing, they want to be snapped out of that comfortable zone so they can see something they haven't seen before. It's expectations that make us zombies, thinking you know what's going to happen and then craving the same thing. I only want to eat mac and cheese. I only want to hear songs on the radio that I've heard over and over again. And that is so true of so many people that that's what a lot of radio has become. Songs that you've already heard. People walk into clubs and they want the band to play songs they already heard on the radio in the 70s and 80s over and over again. I want to know all the words. I want to know what's coming. Don't surprise me. But isn't art all about surprise? How can you laugh if you're not going to be surprised? I was talking to a friend, and we were talking about how difficult it is to be funny and tell jokes. And he said he went to see a popular comedian one time. And this popular comedian is known for a couple routines. He goes around and says the same material, and he's very popular and very funny. But there's a particular shtick that he does that everybody knows by a certain name. And he was at this show, and he was leaving the show, and he heard a lady say, "Oh, I'm glad he did." Now, I'm going to change it and make it Pop-Tarts. "I'm glad he did Pop-Tarts. I love the Pop-Tart. I love when he does the Pop-Tarts." And she was referring to the series of jokes he does about how odd Pop-Tarts are or something. And this is what I don't understand. I often laugh when I'm surprised. I laugh when something is unexpected. If I've heard it a lot, if I know it's coming, I don't see what's as funny about it. And this has happened with funny shows, especially things I thought were funny when I was young. I said, "I'm going to see that movie again. I bet that Peter Sellers movie is hilarious." And I will watch it, and I will have this look on my face, which is a combination of disorientation, surprise, disappointment, confusion, disassociation. And I will think, what happened? The movie didn't change, but I did, because I already seen it. And now I'm not even the same person. My expectations, what have they done to me? Oh, what do you expect, my friend? What do you expect when you get Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White? Now, let's take the "with Hardy White" part. Hardy White. Let's break that down. Whoa, 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 but that's your name. How can it mean anything? How can it have symbolic meaning if it's only by chance? Oh, I know, that's very difficult. Well, I don't have to be Hardy White. I could make up another name and be another person or a totally different personality. Imagine that. Imagine if I were to go on the radio and not even be myself, create a totally different persona. Say, "Oh, hello, everybody. I'm David Luger, And la, 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 la. And I tell you a bunch of lies and unexpected things. Isn't that interesting? So even by being myself, I had made a choice to be myself. And along with that comes all the difficulty of misunderstanding or people's expectations. Hardy White. They see my surname and they think I'm referring to my race or my skin color or something like that. My first name. Perhaps it's a description. You know, a lot of people have first names that mean something. You go online, you look it up, say, what's my name? It means beautiful forest. That doesn't mean you're a beautiful forest. It means that your parents maybe like the feeling evoked by the idea of a beautiful forest, or maybe they didn't even know that's what it meant, and they just thought, hey, I'm going to name them. I like the sound of the name George, which means farmer. It's not that they wanted you to be a farmer. Maybe they didn't even know that's what that meant. But now you're George. You're David. Are you beloved? Maybe not. Maybe you're not beloved. Maybe you're loathed, and your name is now ironic. Maybe your name is ironic. Has anyone ever been named that? That'd be very straightforward. I'd be okay with that, and they'd call you Ronnie. Why are you listening to a show? If this is the first time you've heard the show and you're hearing a show that's an explanation of a show that you haven't even heard, is that strange? Is that odd? You go online and there's a lot of videos and things that are explaining shows that are pieces of art that seem impenetrable. Now you say, I don't need an explanation. Can't I just have my own impressions of something? If I were to look at a Renaissance painting, and there were saints in the Renaissance painting, and I did not know that there is a religious language in a lot of art, so that if somebody's holding a key, there's St. Peter. If there's a person that has a tray with eyeballs on it, there's St. Lucy. And I look at that, and I like the painting without knowing that. Do I really need to know the other stuff? Now, some people will argue, no, come on, I don't need to know all that stuff to enjoy it. And it is true that if you look at something in ignorance, you still get 100% experience. You're still going to get feelings. But if you know a little more about it, you do quantitatively get more information, and therefore there's more thoughts, and therefore there's a larger possibility for experience. So I like learning about things, getting insight, having access to other people's ideas about what they thought about something. Maybe that'll enhance my experience. Maybe that'll make me feel something in addition to what's there. Maybe a little extra information isn't a bad thing. I guess you could explain something away if we were watching a murder mystery and the first thing out of my mouth was, now the butler did it. Now, the reason they had the butler, to go, oh, goodness, you've robbed me of that experience of knowing it was the butler. The next thing out of your mouth better be good because you've just diminished it now. So some information can diminish an experience. If you walk into a haunted house and somebody goes, boo, I'm somebody in a costume. That's no good. Somebody walks out on stage and says, I will be playing the part of the great general. Oh, whoops, they do that in Kabuki. And they ask you to bear with them. And they say, please, bless this performance. I'm thankful for the honor of being able to get up here in a minute and be that great general. So thank y'all and stay tuned. I should do that at the beginning of the show. Y'all, are y'all ready? Are y'all ready? I'm going to go get my costume on in a minute. And I'm going to come out here and I'm going to be funny or confusing or something. Say, oh, hoo-hoo, all right. So I hope I'm not giving you too much information. I will say this. My show isn't about anything. And it is different from other things. And yet it's not. Because in a way, I can't escape. I can't escape what the medium dictates. I'm always going to be using mostly words. I'm going to be speaking to you, hopefully, in full sentences. I don't have to. I could be more conceptual. But I realize that I must make some compromises because I have a bit of an agenda. and that's to communicate a few things. I usually just state them right up front. Here I'll state them well into the show. I am here to entertain you, and entertainment is a spectrum, because you can be entertained by a small thing, something that can distract you from maybe something painful, or at the very least something boring. I was sitting in an airport, and I'm just going to come out and say it was Atlanta. I don't even know what concourse it was. Maybe Concourse C. You'll know in a minute. But there is a Japanese restaurant, and you're sitting almost on the concourse, right? So it's like a railing. It's like you're on a patio, but there's no. It's not an outside. It's the airport where people are walking by. And I was eating the soybeans, edamame, they're in little pods, as you know, and you kind of squeeze them out, and you pop them into your mouth like that. And I squeezed one, and the soybean missed my mouth and shot over the railing and on to the concourse where people were walking by. And I sat and I watched that soybean, because people were walking by it and just missing it. No one saw it, but they were sort of just missing it by chance. I was going, oh, it's going to get stepped on. No, it's not. Oh, it's going to get there. No, it's not. And I watched that soybean for a while until finally it got smushed, and I guess it stuck to somebody's shoe and they walked off with it. But I've done that a lot. If I'm sitting at a bus stop or something, sometimes you'll focus on a small thing, a little bug, and you'll notice something that you don't usually notice. Like maybe that, oh, look at that ant. What's he carrying? It's a piece of cheese. I bet he got it from the rotten, spoiled cheese party. That's what happened. That ant just came from that spoiled cheese I was talking about just a few minutes ago. And look at him. He's carrying it. Where is he going to carry it? He's going in a circle. And your attention will focus on something that seems to be meaningless and inconsequential, but it's giving you a feeling, and it's making you think something. And as you watch it, you may even come up with an idea, a brilliant idea for an invention. I just saw that, and I invented the vacuum cleaner. I mean, it might have happened that way. People who have great ideas may have been inspired by just sitting there and watching something stupid and thinking, that reminds me. It seems like a sucking action. I'm watching that person suck up cheese. I wonder if we could suck up dirt off a carpet with a similar device. So the first draft is just holding somebody by their feet and putting their lips on the carpet and going, okay, inhale. But then eventually you get where you've made a proper Hoover. Amazing. And that wouldn't happen unless you get into a kind of a slower headspace and you set aside your expectations and you let things in that you wouldn't normally let in. People will say, oh, I've heard a little about that, and that's not my cup of tea. Ah, did you taste it? No. Maybe it isn't even tea. Did you wonder? Did you walk around it? No. Maybe it's not even a cup. So you say it's not your cup of tea. That could very well be. But it could be a box of bunnies. You don't know, because you walked away the minute you thought it was a cup of tea. Don't do that. You don't even have to fully like things to get something out of them. There is levels of appreciation. Not every art that you see has to blow you away. But if it doesn't, you don't put it on your stuff I hate list. Your job isn't to go around and thumbs up or thumbs down. The world is not one of these talent contests that we see on TV. And it's infected our brains. We watch these and say, nope, not that act. Yes, this act. No, that wouldn't quite have it. There are degrees. And when you're in different contexts, you have different expectations, and you get different things out of it. So if you're watching one of those talent contests on television, and a person comes out and they sing, you have very high standards, and they have to sing like an angel. But if you're at your church, and your church is having a talent show, and someone comes out and does something passably well, it might blow you away, because you have different expectations.
but you still have a great experience. You don't think your child's play is going to go, oh, they're doing Mr. Toad and Mr. Frog, and it's all eight-year-olds. It might be entertaining. It might not be like it when Jeremy Irons played Mr. Frog. And I don't know if he did or not. Who knows? But that's my example, and I'm going to stick with it. Child's play, professional play, are they equal? No, they're not. Can you get something out of both of them? Yes, you can. If you're hungry, a piece of bread is a feast. If you're wealthy, a piece of bread is disappointing. What I'm saying is that you can get to a place where that piece of bread always has something for you. So you don't have to judge. You don't have to listen to a song and go thumbs up, thumbs down, next. But that's the way we do things. I think we even do that with people. Oh, yeah, her I like, her not so much. Sometimes on the show you will notice I have my friends, Butchie and Lou. And we will have situations and there will be sounds like we're sitting together having coffee. And Butchie will say, good morning. Lou will say, good morning. You will hear coffee pouring. You will hear the newspaper rustle. And you will know that we are sitting in a kitchen having breakfast. And then we'll have an exchange. Blah, 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 blah. What did you do today? And Lou will say, I discovered a cave under the house. And I think that it's very ancient and we should explore it later. And I set it up and there's a story and there's characters and everything like that. Well, that seems very common. That seems just like a lot of entertainment we have, like old-time radio shows, like television shows, like situation comedies. Hardy, why are you doing that? That seems very structured, very expected. Yes, let me tell you something. There is a Japanese tale, a folk tale, of a woman who had a lover on another island. She lived on an island, he lived on another island. And every night he would put out a lantern, and she would swim in the dark between the islands, guided by the lantern. Well, eventually he fell out of love with her, and he extinguished the lantern. And so on her way there, she drowned because she could not find her way. The end. Occasionally, I like to be able to give you something to hang on to. There's got to be a little bit of a respite. Every once in a while, you need to relax and be around something familiar. Being in a constant state of alert is not sustainable. I am my most observant when I am terrified. I remember that I was walking alone in Montpellier, France, at 2 a.m. Now, I think it's a little less safe than it was 20 years ago, so this would be even worse today, but it was scary. I was the only one, and I was just coming from band practice, and I was walking down a very narrow, dark, medieval street carrying a saxophone case, which is a way of saying, I am completely defenseless. Also, I have a $1,000 item in my, mine wasn't worth $1,000, in my hand here. So I was very scared, and so I became very hyper alert, hyper vigilant. I started to notice everything. I noticed every side street suddenly. Every sound became amplified. I became very aware of my surroundings. And it was wonderful. In a frightening way, I heard more than I usually hear, but it was also exhausting. I was in a keyed up state. And so I might have been noticing more and taking in more information, but it isn't something I could sustain. And if I tried to, I would eventually get exhausted. And so I needed some place to rest. Got to my apartment, keyed in, then I could lay down. And whether this was true or not, I perceived the threat to be over. I didn't have to notice things as much. I could even close my eyes and just get to the couch and fall on there, turn the TV on without even thinking about where the remote was. We need that too. And so sometimes I like to give you something where you don't have to think very hard. But other times, I do like to confuse you and take you on a nice rambling long walk where you think, where are we going? Where are you going with this? Sometimes I'll even repeat myself. And I'll talk about that rotten cheese again, that spoiled cheese. But you already mentioned that. I feel like we're going in circles. Are we going in circles or spirals? I promise you, we're going somewhere. Even if you repeat something, the time has changed. All that was in the past, wasn't it? I'm talking about present-day rotten cheese. That old cheese is probably already gone. I think those ants divided it up, and they all carried off a piece in different directions. And one of them got the piece with the hair on it, which is very desirable for ants. They like that. They use the hair to make little ant hats, and they weave it. There are artists in the past, and I think maybe this happened in the 19th century, where they would take hair, maybe hair from the dead, and they would weave it into things and make a picture out of it as a way of preserving that person, literally, but also making something that's a tribute to them. I had a friend that was an artist that did that. She had a friend of hers died, and she was able to get some of her hair. And you say, well, that seems kind of macabre. But it wasn't for her. She really needed that. And it meant something to her. And it was a beautiful thing, even though it's kind of unexpected, isn't it? Maybe not something you thought about. There are those cultures that like to live among the bones of their ancestors. I was on a train. I wasn't. Now I'm on a train right now. I'm on this train right now. Can you hear the train tracks? I don't know if I put the sound in. I might have. I might have gone back later and added a sound effect to this. I don't know. You could be listening to something much different than what I'm experiencing right now because of the addition of time. I might have. There might be loads of sound effects. I might sound right now like I'm literally on a train, or maybe not. There's no way of knowing. Every other word that you hear might have been done at a different time and all cobbled together, all pieced together. Everything you hear is magic. Everything is a trick. There's always something behind the scenes that you're not seeing. There's always something unknown. And if you ignore it, you ignore wonderful things and exciting ideas. So think about them. Don't toss them away. Look at them. Now, I don't mean to hoard. Some people accumulate things of the time, they never let them go. What's a wonderful way to do it is you take something in, you experience for a while, and then you pass it on. Pass it on. Ideas are like that. Hats are like that. Books are like that. People really realize that with books. I'll read it, and now I want someone else to have it so badly that I'm willing to give it to them knowing that they will never read it. How many of you have accumulated books like that? There are some items that are difficult to give to somebody because they're just way too obvious. And they might not ever get around to exploring them because you're asking them to do something that's large. And that is giving them a book. Say, I would just read this novel. It's 1,000 pages. Don't be daunted. I really want you to read it. Erg. And you get this. Another thing is to say, I'm giving you a painting in a frame. Oh, no. Now I have to hang it. So I like to have things that are just more ephemeral, something that people can experience and they're not burdened by, something that will go by quickly, something that will disappear, something that is almost essentially useless. So if they use it and they throw it away, if they throw it away, nobody is hurt. If they throw it away, they're not damaged, I'm not damaged. So everything that I make is disposable. All these shows are disposable. Every week I think, didn't I just make a show? Didn't I just do this thing? And I put it out there, and it broadcasts. And sometimes, if I listen very closely, I can hear crickets. Sometimes you'll get a note from somebody say, oh, thank you, that was so moving, and that's wonderful. But it's unpredictable, and I never know when it's going to happen. And then the show disappears, and I never hear about it again, and I actually forget about them. Now, I know that there's shows on the archive, and you could go and listen to them, and you could transcribe them, and you could memorize them if you wanted to. That's entirely possible. Someday they will disappear entirely. Someday they will no longer exist. But in my mind, they already no longer exist the minute they come out of my mouth. It's something that's disposable. You don't have to listen to it. It doesn't burden you. When I talk to you, it doesn't form into a big cube of granite that you have to have in your house. I have done, I'm almost up to 400 shows. That's 400 cubes of granite. Imagine if they all had to accumulate. Imagine if everything I was saying to you was a record album. You'd have 400 more record albums. Where are you going to put them? But they're not. I am merciful. Hardy White is merciful. This is just like nutrition. You eat it. You take in the nutrients. And then my show becomes poo. After you've gotten everything you needed out of it, it's just poo. So you just sweep it away. You sweep poo? It depends on the dryness. You know how that is. You've watched. If you have a dog, you could see the evolution of a turd. It desiccates. And say, well, this is not so bad. And if you had a long time, you might, what do you call them, coprolite or something, where it becomes a fossilized poo. And then it turns to stone, just like ELO said it would. And then what? Then you have evidence of a past meal. I wonder. Then it becomes an object of contemplation and not just a stone crap. Interesting. Well, I don't know. I thought I'd say it. If it was interesting, that'd be great. If you get something out of it, that's wonderful. Like any art is like that, or dance, or anything is like that. Food, you put food before someone, you never know if it's going to be their taste. You never know if it's going to nourish them. If it does nourish them, it's almost a miracle. We use that word so frequently that it's meaningless. In fact, I've heard people say, expect a miracle. How can you expect something that is by definition unexpected, improbable, and almost impossible? And yet, we say we see miracles every day. Well, if you see miracles every day, how is that still a miracle? I don't think I quite understand. It's miraculous. Life is miraculous. Miraculous? It's pedestrian. It's common. Life is common. Well, it's almost impossible. How can it be impossible when it just keeps persisting? Even though all these things are against it. You know, I know that sounds crazy and it does seem like it's improbable, but how can something that is so prevalent, persistent, be improbable? Oh, I disagree. Do you? Okay, go ahead. Start talking. Your turn. That's what I love about what I'm doing. Most human interaction are monologues. Very few people listen to one another. I'm not the first to say this. You talk, and the other person's just basically waiting their turn. And then they're going to say something. Oh, I've seen it so many times in what purports to be an exchange of ideas. But it's not an exchange of ideas. It's like musicians trying to play the same song without hearing each other. I'll play my bit. Now you play yours. Walk, walk, walk. Quack. Well, no, come on. I was playing I Remember April. Can't you? You weren't even listening. You had an idea of you were going to play that part, and you were going to put it in regardless. You're just waiting to tell your story. Notice that? People say, I'm going to let you tell your story because I just really want to tell mine, even though it may have nothing to do with yours. Oh, my gosh. I'm not blaming anybody. I do this, too. But for me to be able to speak without contradiction, without anybody challenging me, you say, well, that can't be good for you. It is and it isn't. It's wonderful because it doesn't stop me from saying something. Something I might be afraid to say if somebody was looking at me going, oh, don't say that. I've had some of my nightmare regrets are from times that I've spoken like this in front of an audience and I've had a human face in front of me. And I'm very good at reading expressions. Not all people, but to some degree we all are, and we can even read micro expressions. It just depends on your physiology, really, on your neurology. But I have been cursed with having a little more perception of human emotion than I need to survive. And all it does is make me self-conscious. because we all make little eye-rolly, I disagree with that, I'm bored expressions all the time, and we should not be held responsible for them. Some we can't even help, and we're not being offensive necessarily, and it took me a long time to learn that. That when I perform in public, that people are going to yawn, they're going to roll their eyes, they're not going to laugh at a joke. And I can't let that change what I was going to say next. And it's almost impossible not to do. You get cowed. But how am I going to offer up a smorgasbord of ideas or experiences if I'm constantly judging them? And so there is a part of me that cares, doesn't care. Now, how can you care and not care at the same time? You mean you sort of care? When I say something is something and isn't something at the same time, I don't mean that it's anything in between. When I say a house is both a house and not a house, I don't mean that it's sort of a house. I mean that probabilities, like they do, like we think maybe happens in nature, exist at the same time, until you make a choice, until you make an observation, until you bring your little friend expectations with you. And then when expectations enters the room, all the other probabilities disappear, and you're stuck with one. So once you have an interpretation of miracle nutrition with Hardy White, all the other ones disappear. Now, they could very well be wrong, like in the Jackson Pollock painting. Once you, you know, it's not wrong to get rid of the, oh, this is just, you know, this is just, this is a joke on the observer. This was done to, that might be absolutely wrong. Some things are. Some things are sort of right, and some things are right. Sometimes you just don't have the key to something. And once you have the key or the special glasses, the special red glasses, that once you look at the drawing, all the red that was obscuring the secret message underneath disappears. And you see, this is not just red dots on a page. There's a secret code under it. I needed special glasses to make the red go away so I could get the hidden message. And that's the exciting part. And that's the fun part. And I like that. And so I don't mind just shoveling this stuff out here like this. So you're just talking. You're just going to talk for an hour? Will you say anything? Are you playing a joke on us? Is this just nonsense ramblings? Are you just making things up? He just goes on and on. It's stream of consciousness. Everything we say in life is stream of consciousness. All rational thought is stream of consciousness. Everything that you think has been thought out, that's your consciousness. Linear. So it is one thing after another. That's a stream. But we use it to mean nonsense. But it's not nonsense. A stream isn't chaos. If you were to analyze what's really going on in a flowing body of water, it obeys laws. Certain things are happening. You just can't see them. You just can't take it all in. You have to reduce it to running water. But if you were to break it down, if you were able to freeze it in time and look at it, if you were able to look at what the molecules are doing, all the forces of nature, you would see something totally different. You can look at the surface of the ocean and think you understand what an ocean is, but you will never understand what an ocean is until you penetrate the surface. And then, one of the first things you realize is the mysteries are manifold. There's so much. There's so many. There's so many things. Oh, open yourself up to them. You can be open to others' ideas and experiences without losing yourself at all. You don't have to be rigid. You can be flexible. You can be fluid. You can look at nuance. You can half like things. You can like things and not like things at the same time. Oh, please, come with me to this place. Walk with me into miracle nutrition so that we can be on a train together. Take a journey in our minds with no expectations. And on radio, you can fill in all those things. You could conceivably listen to it a second time and imagine a totally different setting. That's it. And any episode where there's no sound effects and there's no other characters, please listen to it again and imagine this time I'm sitting in a living room. The next time I'm sitting in a restaurant. The next time I'm dead. The next time I'm in the past. The next time I'm floating over mountains. And it will be different every time. And you might get something out of it. We know that you don't have to be smarter than someone to teach someone something. You know that. You know that you could have a child teach you, and you have, I'm sure. So teach me how to make that funny S. What is that crazy S you're drawing all over your notebooks? Teach me how to do that. Right? But I'm not going to say it, because we'll get in an argument what it's really called. But something like that, you've been taught by a child, haven't you? How do you make one of those foldy things that open up, say, a color and everything like that? You got to be a certain age. You got to be little to know how to do it, maybe. Everybody's experiences are different. So literally, everybody has something to teach to you. It's just whether you're receptive, whether you think you know it all or not. I find that there's a weird thing that happens to people that are pretty sure that they know what's going on. If you think you know everything, you can probably be convinced of anything. And I know that sounds strange. I know that sounds weird. But there is a certain cynicism that happens when people think they got it all figured out. When they think they've got it all figured out, they basically hand you a key to their rigid universe. And if you say something that conforms to that, to their expectations, they will believe it because they have already a priori accepted it. So it doesn't even have to be true because they're not going to evaluate it anymore. They've stopped seeing. They've stopped looking. They just accept it. If you're a religious person, this was embodied in the character of Isaac, and I won't go into it. Please come to our Torah study class next Marbeth Ivanim. But you'll see this all over literature. People who have closed their eyes and no longer look because they think they know. And when you think you know, you can make all sorts of wrong decisions. It's wonderful to go around life thinking, I probably know some things. There's other things I don't know. But I think I'm going to keep my eyes open. Because you know what? And this is a cliche. And I love saying it. Think about it for a minute. But, hey, you never know. The only people that can say you never know are people who live in our dimension that has time. You never know because of time. It's always changing. Just because something happened in the past doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen in the future. It's about probability. When you turn into the show, there's a probability it's going to be one of many things. And then once you listen to it, is it set? But see, it was that thing before you listened to it. Ooh, quantum, goofy, la la. We love that, don't we? If you are the type of person that you like to read about science, especially things that baffle you, especially things that make you go, wow, the universe is weird, isn't it? And then you try to do a deep dive into it and say, okay, I'm going to make a career in physics. And you have to start putting numbers to things. And then you have to start carving them up like that where I got to describe it and I got to make it fit and I've got to take my theory and I've got to plug it into something else and it's got to be right. And you say, well, that's not the experience I wanted. It turns out what I liked was confusion. What I liked was having my mind blown. What I liked was the feeling of not knowing, of being disoriented, of having information that did not conform with what I thought was going to happen. I got on a train, and I rode the train until it stopped, and then I got off, and I stood there at the station, and I looked at the city, and I decided to just walk. I wasn't even sure where I was, so I took off down a street, past some buildings, ordinary roads. Nothing really caught my attention. Shops, streets, sidewalks. But after I'd walked for a while, I noticed that the city started to disappear, and I was all of a sudden in the country, and I was on a dirt road, and I was headed into a forest. It happened just like that. I wasn't sure if I just stopped paying attention. Maybe, you know, you get daydreaming, you don't notice, and all of a sudden, when you do notice your surroundings, you're somewhere else. I was pretty sure that's what happened. I was pretty sure. And I was walking in a dirt path. Then I came to some stone steps that were on the edge of a hill, and I started walking up these steps. It was a gentle mountain. It was a gentle hill, what we would call a mountain in the East Coast and what people on the West Coast of the United States would call a hill. But I walked up these stone steps, and at the top of the stone steps, even though it was incongruous with where I was geographically, there was some sort of temple, some sort of church, I thought. It looked like that. It was kind of formal. It had columns. It was symmetrical and beautiful. And I stood there on the edge of the steps at the top step, and I looked down, and I was much higher than I was, and I could see a stream, but I could also see what must have been a highway, because it looked like a white river going in one direction and a red river going in the other direction, like a highway does at rush hour at night when there's just headlights and taillights and you're up in a skyscraper. That's what it felt like, but I was on a mountain. Didn't seem exactly right. I knew something might have been a little bit off. I walked into the temple. And there was a plaque. And the plaque described the story that I told you earlier about the lovers on different islands. Except this one had a twist. The woman would swim to the lantern on the other island. And when the lantern was extinguished, when the love of her lover was extinguished, and she swam, this time she did not drown. This time she swam into a column of air where there was no water. It was open, about 10 feet around. And when she hit it, she fell. But not very far. Not enough to be hurt. Just enough to find herself in a cave by herself. She looked up, and she realized that this was no ordinary cave, that it had been turned into a sort of temple, that maybe something special had happened there and had been commemorated years later, the way the cave of the Mary Magdalene is. And she was awed. And she no longer thought of her lost love. She had seen something she never expected to see. And it happened in a story that for years had always gone one way. But this time, something had changed. And if she had given up hope and had never made that swim, this would never have happened. If she didn't think that an ordinary thing couldn't be revisited and that that experience wouldn't change, that she wouldn't encounter a miracle on her way to be nourished, she would never have seen this. If you had never listened to this show, you may have missed something. You may still have missed something. What I don't want you to ever miss is the fact that I'm another human being speaking to you, that anything that comes out of me might be useful, that my perspective is slightly different than yours, enough to see another angle that you'll never see because you'll never be me and I'll never be you. And so that angle, that view from that person is always precious. So listen. Today, listen to music that you would never normally listen to. Listen to a person speak who you would never normally listen to. Look at a painting that you think you hate. Read a book that you're not interested in. Reserve judgment just for a day. Take your expectations and leave them at home, just for once, just for once.
You're listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, my friends, thank you so much.
Standing, I was standing at the crossroads, and I, oh Lord, I, do you know somehow? command.
Yes, I am.